Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The president doesn't. Sometimes you feel like a... That means that it is not illegal. Sometimes you don't. Tear down this wall. Here's Johnny. Hey, Luke, may the force be with you. It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John has been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Good morning, Mr. Dave Schwann.
Oh, good morning to you, Dave.
How are you, pal?
Doing well. Doing well.
Today was the anniversary of the Our Lady of Angels.
I was hoping you were, someone was going to bring this up.
Yeah.
It was the 60th anniversary of the fire.
I know, it's wild. I was talking to someone at the Broadcast Museum about this, who's very familiar with it, went to the memorial service that was in the church, and Cardinal Supich presided over the mass today.
Okay, yeah.
And he lost his older brother.
Really?
And he was really young, so he didn't even know his older brother, but lost his older brother. And there was two priests that I knew, Father Joseph Agnibeni, who was probably the most visible clergy on there. He was our pastor. And I remember when it was the 20th anniversary in the late 70s, I was 10 years old. And he told the story during a mass, during a homily. And I thought at 10 years old, being a kid going to a Catholic school, how horrifying this was for, I mean, not only obviously the children and the teachers and the nuns, and but the parents and the community that this was in. Because it was like 92 children and three nuns died. And none of them, all of them were burned, but crushed by falling roofs, jumping out windows to their death.
Yeah.
Smoke inhalation, which was a big piece of it. It's so tragic.
Yeah. I interviewed for the 40th anniversary. There are a number of books on the fire, and one of them is called To Sleep with the Angels. And I interviewed one of the co-authors of the book, John Kunster, who was a longtime reporter for the old Chicago Daily News, who was on duty when the fire happened in 1958.
Wow.
And I read the book, and it was, I'll just say, it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
I'll just put it that way.
Right, right.
And I got very immersed into the history of the fire and went to the library and discovered that it was an international story.
Yes, it was.
1958, the height of the Cold War, it made news in the Soviet Union.
That crazy.
It was a story in Pravda, in the paper out of the Soviet Union there. And also some pictures from the Tribune and the Sun-Times, especially of the funeral.
It was overwhelming. I was watching some of the footage on WGN TV yesterday. And it's over. It's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. Yeah. Even 60 years later.
60 years later.
Yeah.
Other small items. 1800, Washington, D.C. established as the capital of the United States. It was not at first, of course. It was first Philadelphia, the Independence Hall and Congress Hall, New York City, Federal Hall, and a number of other locations.
Put in a Maryland. Plug for Federal Hall. If you're in New York, Lower Manhattan, it's worth the trip to go over there.
Okay.
And you know what's so wild about it is it's on Wall Street. It's right across from the New York Stock Exchange.
Did not know that. That's very cool. 1899, President Harrison visits the opening of the Chicago Auditorium here in the Windy City. And Dave covered that story. Here's some audio. The auditorium building is beautiful.
It sure is.
It is. We've had some events there. It's Adler and Sullivan, I think, is the architect of that building.
And young Frank Lloyd Wright was involved maybe a little bit later.
Yeah, Yeah. And since 1947, it's been the home of Roosevelt University.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Right. Eleanor Roosevelt came to the dedication.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
cool. She was here for the dedication of it.
1907, the first Christmas seals were sold. Christmas seals were labels placed on the mail during the Christmas season to raise fund and awareness for charitable programs, particularly lung diseases, tuberculosis, and child welfare. Here's a commercial of Frank Sinatra doing a spot for Christmas seals.
Every 5 minutes, another American breaks down with tuberculosis. It can happen to any of us, age, sex, rich or poor. It doesn't make any difference. But right now, each of us has the opportunity to join in the fight against TB through our purchase of Christmas seals. Our Christmas seal dollars are needed for chest x-rays, health education, rehabilitation, and for medical research. For Gordy and for thousands who are young and old, the fight against TB is face to face. But for us, it's a lot easier.
And there you have it.
Was that a television spot?
It was a television spot in the 1950s.
Okay.
1927, the Grand Ole Opry made its first radio broadcast in Nashville, Tennessee. Still on the air today.
It's an American institution.
Absolutely is. Absolutely is. 1940, the first NFL championship game on national radio. The Bears beat the Redskins 73-0. I'd like to see that happen today at noon. You know?
73-0.
1 year later, President Roosevelt delivers the Day of Infamy speech to Congress the day after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Let's take a listen.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific.
Yeah. Wow.
Indeed.
And, you know, FDR, I mean, he was such a, he was really the first president that really embraced the media.
Well, there wasn't much electronic media.
There wasn't.
But you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing an interview with Orson Welles saying that he had, you know, and correctly described what we just heard, Roosevelt's ringing voice, as he called it, that got through to the cheapest radio.
Well, and
it did.
And gave, you know, really gave the opportunity to, I forgot my train of thought. What happened?
Well, it gave everybody the opportunity to come together, the fireside chats.
And he did that. He did that through World War II. I mean, his voice was comforting people that your president was talking to you on a regular basis.
Which I'm certain had to be a reason why he just won four presidential terms so handily.
Absolutely.
By the way,
thanks for helping me out there, Dave.
Speaking of Pearl Harbor and everything else, the memorial that is at Pearl Harbor, called World War II Valor in the Pacific, run by the National Park Service, is unforgettable. To go there,
we're gonna hit that area in the spring, so we're gonna make sure we take a look.
Definitely go.
1952, the first TV acknowledgement of pregnancy. TV back then, you slept in separate beds.
Yep.
So there was really no way to get pregnant unless you were throwing one across the room. So this is
all through, and the classic Dick Van Dyke show.
Yes,
where
exactly.
She's ready to go to the hospital.
Exactly.
Yes, they're
exactly.
In separate beds.
Let's take a listen.
This is
this is when they found out she was going to the hospital. They all practiced all afternoon and then they were panicked when it happened.
Oh, there's Fred.
Yeah, there's Fred. Get off your butt, Fred.
Wait for me!
Critical.
Yeah, might help.
Critical, yeah. Okay. All right, 1963. Frank Sinatra Jr. is kidnapped. So 55 years ago at age 19, on December 8th, so next Saturday, here's Lake Tahoe. Sinatra was released 2 days later after his father paid $240,000, which is about $1.9 million today. Ransom demanded by the kidnappers. Barry Keenan, John Irwin, and Joe Amsler were soon captured, prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced to long prison terms for kidnapping, of which they only served small portions. Mastermind Keenan was later adjudged to have been legally insane at the time of the crime, so he wasn't responsible for his actions. Now, the clip that I have, and there's newsreels of this, but Don Rickles spoke about this with David Letterman, and he really was telling a joke, but it was a true story of sitting down with Frank a couple weeks after the kidnapping, and Frank told a joke about his own son being kidnapped. Let's take a listen.
Remember when Frank Jr., remember when he was kidnapped?
I remember that,
unfortunately.
Sure. Yeah.
So thank God he comes home safe and sound. Mm-hmm. It's about a month, 2 months later, and I'm sitting with Frank around the living room. He said, Don, we got the kid back. I said, yeah, Frank, it's great. I said, that's wonderful. He said, you know why they let him go? He said, why? They heard him humming in the trunk.
That's the line I was trying to come up with.
Humming in the trunk.
Humming.
Oh, man. I love that Frank told him the joke. 2 weeks after his son is home, he was humming in the trunk. Let's see here. 1965, a Charlie Brown Christmas debuted. First primetime animated TV special based on the comic strip Peanuts by Charles Schulz. It was produced and directed by former Warner Brothers and UPA animator Bill Melendez, along with Lee Mendelsohn, who also it was sponsored by Coca-Cola. It had been aired in the Christmas Eve season every year since through 2000 on CBS and since 2001 on ABC. Next week, I have a conversation with Lee Mendelsohn, who's a producer of that show, legendary producer. But I'm going to give you a little taste of next week's interview with a clip telling him how the animated special got on the air.
So Coca-Cola called in 1965 when a Time magazine cover story about the Charlie Brown characters came out. And they said, if you folks that did the documentary, which we like, I ever thought of doing a Christmas show? I said, absolutely. And they said, well, we need an outline in 2 days down here in Atlanta. I said, no problem. I hung up. I called Mr. Schulz. I said, I think I just sold a Charlie Brown Christmas show. And he said, what in the world is that? And I said, it's something you're going to write tomorrow. And there was another long pause. He said, all right, we can do it. Have Melendez come up and we'll meet tomorrow and figure out something. So we met the next day, came up with all the ideas for Charlie Brown Christmas that eventually came out 6 months later and on the CBS. We had to give them an outline first. And so we did the outline, and we said, we're going to use real kids. We're going to use Vince Guaraldi again with jazz and Beethoven and traditional cute music. We're going to do a Christmas play to show all the pressure on kids at Christmas time. We're going to use real kids, not adults. And we're going to have Linus read from the Bible and so forth and so on. Sent the outline by Western Union back then to Atlanta. They bought the outline. They bought the show. And then, of course, Bill Melendez had a storyboard it after Charles Schulz wrote the dialogue, and that was the second step.
Whoops, there you have it. Let me turn on my mic. It's always helpful to hear the listener hear me when I'm speaking.
It doesn't work if you don't turn it on.
But, you know, there's been, and I heard this talked about earlier in the day, there's been some controversy about, like, these kids' shows that, gosh, like, can't we just, like, oh, this is inappropriate now. We shouldn't, you know, they were talking about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that, you know, the way that Donner treated Rudolph and told him that it was more important for him to look good than to be a good person. So this show is irrelevant. They shouldn't be airing it anymore. Or the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. There's a moment in the scene where they're sitting at the Thanksgiving table, and Franklin, the African-American kid, is sitting on the other side of the table by himself, and they said he was segregated from the rest of the group, and they shouldn't air the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving anymore. And I'm listening to this, I'm going, oh my gosh. And there's a radio station that won't play Dean Martin's Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Why is that?
Because somewhere in there, he says, honey, stay, you know, he's trying to convince her to stay. It's cold outside. Baby, it's cold outside. Stay inside. And he makes her a drink. And she's like, what's in the drink? So they're like, oh, this is like Bill Cosby, blah, 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 blah. It's come on. And the whole Me Too movement and everything. It's like, are we going to pick apart every little thing? And I understand. I mean, there's stuff from entertainment, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and how, you know, the African-American community was treated and so forth and portrayed. I get that piece of it. But now we're going to start picking apart a few random things in a cartoon because the lessons learned aren't exactly in line with what's today. You got to look at these things for the time period by which they were made, you know?
Yeah.
You can't really... This was made 50 years ago, and it's a quaint little story. Okay, maybe that part wasn't exactly perfect, but now we're not going to air it anymore? Come on. I can't listen to this crap.
Well, I think, too, things like the Charlie Brown Christmas show and that, certainly the Christmas show, is so much a part of you know, the holiday tradition for everybody.
But people complain about it because they're reading from the Bible in it.
Yeah, but they still show it.
Yeah,
That overwhelmingly, you know, has been, you know, a overwhelmingly positive response, you know, from listeners and viewers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. 69, the Jackson 5 made their first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. Now, their first single was released the year before I'm a Big Boy Now. Then they joined Motown. Who introduced them, though?
Diana Ross.
What was that?
Discovered them. Diana Ross discovered them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
when I researched this, so she introduced them at one of their concerts, I guess.
I think so.
Like eventually,
yeah.
And then they did Sullivan, but it was Diana Ross that launched them.
She was the one that probably told Berry Gordy, "There's this group of guys.
That's crazy.
There's the little boy who is quite talented."
And that's how that's how some of the stuff starts, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's so crazy. She'd be somebody I want to get on my show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Diana Ross for sure.
Oh sure.
So
how about Barbara Streisand? Let's get both of them on.
I know Barbara's a legend. I don't know. I don't know if I can. I want to talk politics with her. All right. 2008, 10 years ago, this moment in history, Governor Rod Blagojevich arrested by federal officials for a number of alleged crimes, including attempting to sell the United States Senate seat being vacated by President-elect at the time, Barack Obama. Let's take a listen.
Thank you very much. I'm here to tell you right off the bat that I am not guilty of any criminal wrongdoing, that I intend to stay on the job, and I will fight this thing every step of the way. I will fight, I will fight, I will fight until I take my last breath. I have done nothing wrong.
Okay, all right, I believe you.
And I'm not going to quit a job that people hired me to do because of false accusations and a political lynch mob. Now that's what I'm going to do. Let me tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to do what my accusers and political enemies have been doing, and that is talk about this case in 30-second sound bites on Meet the Press or on the TV news. Now, I'm dying to answer these charges. I am dying to show you how innocent I am.
Now, there's people that will still say that it was a bit unfair, and they used him as an example, and it's the prison term was way too long.
Yeah,
because that was a long time ago. I mean, if you believe it was 10 years ago.
He's halfway through his prison sentence now.
It's crazy. Yeah.
One other quick item of history.
Yes,
what happened 200 years ago tomorrow?
Oh, gosh, did I miss something? tell me.
Illinois Bicentennial.
Oh, yeah, hello.
The state is 200 years old.
We talked about that recently, and they were talking about what the biggest moments were.
Yeah.
We'll
be having stories throughout the morning.
Oh, cool.
Good. About Illinois.
But Lincoln's assassination, obviously one of them. But it goes from there to the Cubs winning the World Series.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I mean, think about that span.
Yeah.
Good stuff.